Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, 5th of October, 2020. And we had of course, with Trump's testing positive for COVID-19 on Friday, we saw a pretty jumpy session. Some contrast there between how the NASDAQ 100 closed on Friday, pretty much down at the bottom, towards the bottom of the session, whereas the broader market, the S&P 500, actually bouncing quite considerably from intraday lows. And then heading into this week with, although we're getting very mixed messages on Trump's health status and some of the treatment methods he's been receiving suggest that it's been a pretty rocky ride for his health over this. The market's taking some of the doctors, word at face value that he might be released as early as today. So we have sentiment up a little bit here to start the week in Asia. Peter, is there anything else you want to pull out of the session on Friday and how the markets are getting underway this week?
Well, I think the market reaction on Friday was as it should have been. I think potentially a slight overreaction, to be honest. I get the constitutional crisis that has to be baked into the prices. So maybe it was a fair enough price reaction, but I mean, the early comments that the equities could be down 10% was just ludicrous. So we're back, as we said on Friday, we're back into the ranges. We'll stay here, I think, for US equities, but also European equities. We'll talk about that later. As we are getting closer to the election, we really need a catalyst, I think, and that could potentially be the earnings. It starts up this week with a few ones, and then it kicks really into gear next week with US financials. So, but I think we are in for a volatile week. Trump's health could go back and forth multiple times over the coming week. We have VIX that is still elevated above 30. And then we have this, the trouble of the market to really discounting to what degree, in what shape earnings will be for Q3. But we'll talk about that in a short while. In terms of European equities, I've put that in on slide two. It's just this horrible going nowhere in stocks 50, both in the short-term range, but also over a five-year horizon. As you can see, we're basically just stuck at the mud. Valuations continue to be quite attractive for European equities, but it's valuations really don't really mean anything unless you have a positive picture overall, and we're still lacking that in Europe with both Brexit and the resurgence of COVID-19 cases, and now with the bars will be shutting down in Paris on Tuesday night, and London also in a pretty restrictive environment. So and Madrid as well.
Right. And I think you're right. It's going to be a jumpy week, not only on Trump's, of course, his health situation, but also the fate of this U.S. stimulus and how much that is linked to ongoing efforts to try to get the Supreme Court nominee in place. And the fact that not only was it Trump that got COVID, but also some of his staff and other Republicans who were a bit blasé about protective measures. It's interesting. We have not seen Democrats getting the illness to the same degree. So I think it could be a very jumpy week, especially on those stimulus headlines, assuming nothing happens on the Trump health front. Ola, we had an interesting discussion this morning about futures positioning. You put out your weekly COT report, which is the report on weekly positioning levels in U.S. futures. And there was an article I pulled out and we were discussing from Bloomberg talking about record short positions on long U.S. treasuries, betting on a yield curve steepening. We have a little bit here on slide four showing that we're at key levels. I've identified the 0.75% level on the 10-year. That's that lower blue line on slide four. And actually already here pretty much on the 30-year, this 1.5%. These round levels are quite critical here for, I think, for psychology. But take us through what you think Bloomberg was doing with positioning and what your perspective is on the actual market positioning, speculatively speaking.
Well, what they do is they it just basically highlights the sometimes a little bit confusing how these numbers are being reported, because what they're looking at just a very broad non-commercial and commercial breakdown of the data, and doing that it basically results in this quite elevated or record short position emerging. What I did put in and the one I'm reporting in my weekly updates are the split between the three major players in the bond market. Market leverage funds, which obviously geared, potentially could be trading the market against other products, just looking to for spreads. You got asset managers, which tend to be real money investors. They're obviously long right now. That's the red line. And then we've got the dealer intermediates who are providing liquidity in the middle. They don't really hold a position. So quite often it's a battle between the bigger the long the asset manager hold, the bigger the short leverage funds hold. So from that insert is obviously the only thing that looks from that perspective is that interest has been dwindling. Positioning has been coming down, so the conviction in the market has been coming down. But there are it is basically I think a matter of flavor what you prefer to look at. But I think this is probably giving a better picture than the just in the commercial non-commercial.
Okay, and I guess the important thing to sort of outline is why people would be putting on these positions short and the long end. And there are two reasons: the improved economic outlook or fears of inflation. That holding a long bond with a very low yield is unwise if inflation is set to rise. We did see last week the elevated August PCE inflation data, the narrative being that the US will suffer worse inflation relative at least to Europe, where we have almost the opposite fears. But surely at some level, some of these commodity prices are going to be a key driver of inflation. And a really odd action late last week, both in copper and the oil price, not really exactly banging on resistance at the moment either.
That's right, John. And actually, as we started, what so far has been a relatively quiet start of the week, we may actually have some quite interesting events coming and data coming from the commodity space this week. But let's start off with copper first, because we've been highlighting this, and that's on slide five in today's deck. We've been highlighting the weakening fundamentals. Inventories were starting to rise again. The market was not as pricing was showing that the tightness at the front had disappeared. We did break down on Friday, and we basically, within one sweep reached the target of that bear flag, you can see, which we highlighted on the chart. That was the that gave support at 284, and that was basically more or less where we bounced from strongly on Friday. And I think the bounce primarily is due to ongoing rumblings out of Chile, where there are two major mines potentially could be heading for strike action as early as Wednesday. And that's if that happens, then obviously that will remove some supply from the market, at least in the short term. So I think that's probably the main reason why the market recovered. The speculative length is still quite elevated, even though we did see a reduction. That will also be highlighted in today's cut update, which will be out on analysis.sax. So, but you're also right. The oil market has really been holding up quite well, because the short term, I think everyone agrees that the short-term outlook is one of weakening fundamentals there as well. Production in Libya has already reached 300,000 barrels from less than 100 just a couple of weeks ago. Could rise even further, and we got a continued delay in the recovery phase as pandemic remains out of control in many places. So I think the market is just really torn between the short-term outlook, which is negative, and then the broad expectation that the market will recover later on. The only thing we know for sure right now is that recovery is continues to be delayed, and that's my main concern about getting too excited at that current level. So I think that there is still a risk that we could see some additional weakness, but I don't think a major sell-off is on the cards. But there's also some focus on inflation, but let's come back to that a little bit later.
Yeah, and one thing focusing on this week, as you mentioned, Peter, will be the Q3 earnings. I guess they don't really get going in earnest until next week and the weeks following, but they are getting started up. What are your perspectives on well, first of all, whether these matter as we're looking towards the U.S. election, and B, the actual earnings and outlooks from companies?
Well, I do actually think they matter to some extent. I think. For the equity market, if you look at the valuation and how much we have priced in, and as you can see on slide three for the S&P 500, the dotted line there is the expectations for earnings. So the current market valuation is discounting a pretty significant rebound in earnings. Companies, not only US, but also European companies, they must deliver on these expectations. Otherwise, I think we could see weakness. So I think they matter a great deal. To some extent, they could even matter more, I think, than the election. You have to keep in mind that the majority of fiscal impulse into the economy is set in stone, regardless of who's actually winning the election. It's like here in Denmark, elections, they matter a lot in the PR and the media, but in terms of the overall fiscal spending, most of it is already, you know, is always planned. So I think the earnings, they matter a lot. And I've also have another insert on slide three, which where you can compare European earnings expectations forward 12 months against the US, which is the blue line versus the orange. I think you can also see there why European equities have troubles, you know, gaining traction and attention by foreign investors and domestic investors, is that simply that earnings expectations just rock bottom. But maybe that's the kicker potentially for European equities, that they can only surprise to the upside given, you know, earnings expectation down 25% since the start of the COVID-19. And then I've put in China as well with its green line. I could say a lot of things about why it's not showing the same behavior as US and Europe. I think I'll just let that chart speak for itself, or that time series speak for itself. But talking about earnings, on Friday, I think we have one of the few ones that are coming up this week, and that's Delta Airlines. They're reporting Q3 earnings. It's one of the largest airlines in the US, if not the largest. Haven't really recovered since the declines in March. We remain very negative on the airlines and the tourism industries still. I should have put in an insert on Delta Airlines, because while profitability is rebounding a little bit, the problem is that their gross debt on the balance sheet have doubled since COVID-19. So there's a lot of debt overhang for companies like Delta Airlines that they will need to, deleverage over the coming years before this industry is attractive. So it's an industry that we continue to not feel that is very attractive, basically.
All right. Well, you mentioned the election, and I briefly wanted to put in here, I meant to do it earlier, the latest polls that were out after the debates, but before Trump's COVID-19 test, seemed to show, at least according to a couple of big ones, one of them was from CNBC, it was at a 13-point advantage for Biden and 14 points in the other poll. So suggesting there's even been a little bit of widening from his negative tone. In any case, it does appear we have this solid sort of steady set of polls pointing towards a Biden victory. And if that is the case, then the key question becomes one of do the Democrats get Senate control? And that is really the key for whether, as you mentioned, Peter, the election matters that much, because without that Senate control, then you just have inability to do tax reform and inability to do really forceful fiscal stimulus, et cetera. So there is a huge game changer, different scenarios between simply a Biden victory and a Biden plus the clean sweep of Congress. That's a key point there. Did you have anything to mention on Facebook before we get to the calendar?
Yeah, and that goes to the election as well, because Facebook will be at the center of this US election. But the election was not taking the headlines on Friday. I know with the weekend, there is an antitrust, not investigation, but a working group inside U.S. Congress. And they put out an idea or a suggestion that Facebook should break up Instagram and WhatsApp they could still control them economically, but they would have to be run separately on a technical basis. To what extent also it includes an economic breakdown, I don't think was pretty clear. But Facebook responded on Sunday with a very, you know, harsh language in 14 pages defense, where they said it's a complete non-starter. But it would be technically almost impossible, according to Facebook, to separate these things, and it's very costly. And you know, cybersecurity, etc., could not be shared across all systems, etc., etc. So Facebook shares were down 3% on Friday, potentially in for a volatile week as this unfolds. They released documents that showed that Mark Zuckerberg, back in the days in 12 when they bought Instagram, apparently an email suggested that the reason why they wanted to buy Instagram was because they had a very hard trouble competing against Instagram. So that's a suggestion that they bought them only to reduce competition. And that's the main angle here against Facebook. So it's shaping up to be an interesting week for Facebook. And then as we get closer to the elections, they will take center stage on their self-centering of news in the news feed regarding the election, and also prohibiting political advertisement, etc., in the days up to the election. So
Yeah, that's an interesting one, and I'm not sure we get anything resolved on that huge headline there about breakup within a week
No.
or within months. But I'm 100% sure that Facebook, as it is currently comprised, will not exist in 10 years. But of course, the time scale is very critical there. I'm sure they'll be broken up in some way, shape, or form.
John, before you go to the calendar, I just want to highlight one thing. As I mentioned about the focus on inflation, we got the we just came out of the biggest quarterly surge in food commodities since 2016, and so there's been some elevated in focus on all these agricultural futures now during the past couple of months. We got the monthly World Food Index out from the United Nations on Thursday, and we did see it already. It reached a 6-month high in August, and it's obviously expected to rise even further in September, or have risen further in September. So that, I think it's one worth to keep an eye on. It needs to jump 7% in order to make a new high for the year, but still, it's potentially showing the trend, and that's obviously one that could add to the focus on inflation. But right now, just to finish off on with gold, it failed above 1900 on Friday. It's lackluster performance despite the worries that we saw on Friday, and the weaker than expected U.S. job report. Just indicate that it's simply not strong enough yet to or the underlying input is still not strong enough for it to mount a challenge to the upside. So once again, we are potentially at risk of some short-term long liquidation. 1882 is the level I'm watching here for the risk of a return down to 1850. But overall, it's still in a consolidation phase here.
Yeah, it feels to me as well like gold gets uncomfortable every time you start to see the long treasuries in the U.S. starting to sell off, which may be a local driver here as well. After a lot of back and forth between Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday on the U.S. Treasury market, I would advise traders keep one eye on that market all week, regardless of what you're trading. So if we look at the calendar, it's World ISM Services, not ISM Services, World Services PMI Day. And for the US, that means the ISM services. We've seen the preliminary figures from a number of places. Those get rounded off today, but the ISM services will be interesting for the pace of the ongoing growth comeback in the US or not. And it'll look at the employment sub-index there in particular. And then we have the Australian RBA cash target announcement overnight. Not expecting much from that. There were some recent noise about the potential for a further rate cut. What is more interesting is the status of the dollar, broadly speaking. And particularly the Aussie dollar, which has been the most aggressive and sort of testing the levels, which begin to suggest that this dollar rally is no more, and we're back to looking at a weaker dollar again. And that area is around 72 to 72.50 on Aussie dollar. For a euro dollar, that's something more like 117.75 to 118 area. So that dollar rally really is under threat here with the sell-off last week. And if we're punching through those levels, then we're back to at least having neutralized the upside threat from the greenback here. We'll be watching that all week. We'll be watching earnings and other bits and pieces on the calendar. And of course, with US President Trump's health and stimulus prospects, I think there's a pretty full menu this week. We'll try to take you through it every day with the Saxo Market Call. That'll round it off for today. And thanks for joining.